the Air with
Glenn Coble, and my guest is Malone. Fred, are you there?
I'm with you.
All right. We are going to continue on. We're talking about inaugurations. That's a hard word for me to say. And we're up to, I don't remember which president, but you're going through history with us.
Yeah, well, we're getting ready to start with James Monroe, but I wanted to mention, I should have mentioned when before we started, up until Dwight Eisenhower's inauguration, all inaugurations of U.S. presidents took place on the first Monday of March.
Uh-huh.
So that didn't change until Dwight Eisenhower became president, and then we went to, what is the third Monday in January.
There you go, messing up my trivia questions again.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's all right.
Well, I if you stop and think about it, with the election being held in early November, and the president not taking office until March, that left 4 months basically with a lame duck president.
Yeah,
which,
long time.
As we know today, is oftentimes a time period when nothing gets done.
Yeah.
So shortening it till at least January did help somewhat. There's still, you know, you still got 60 some days, 70 some days before you get a new before the new president's sworn in, but much better than 4 months.
Yeah. Now, I had a question when you were talking about Washington was called Washington City, not Washington, D.C.
Yes.
Now, that D.C. stands for District of Columbia.
Correct.
Now, if they become a state, would they take that D.C. away?
I don't know whether they would or not. That's an interesting question to pose. Again, before the District of Columbia was formed, and I'm not sure the year. I've read about it before, but I don't remember now what year that was. But
yeah.
Up until that time, it had that distinction of just being called Washington City or Washington.
Yeah.
That's an interesting question. I don't know. I would assume that it would always be referred to as D.C., even if they did get statehood.
Okay.
I don't know.
I'm looking it up while you're talking, all right?
Okay. Well, I'm going to go ahead with James Monroe
sure.
then. Don't have a whole lot on James Monroe. He was a lanky, blue-eyed, commonplace man that really had no other distinguishing features. He was considered the last of the Virginia dynasty, which included Jefferson and Madison, and they really dominated American politics for a quarter of a century. He was the last president to be elected with virtually no opposition, and he was the last U.S. president to wear knee breeches, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah, it is.
And again, he was sworn in 1817 in March.
Okay.
And that's really about all I have on his inauguration. There wasn't too much involved there.
Okay.
Moving on to John Quincy Adams. John Quincy Adams being the son of John Adams, interestingly enough, father-son, our first father-son presidential duo, not to have another one until the two Bushes came along.
Mm-hmm.
John Quincy Adams was our only nonpartisan president and the first to receive fewer popular and electoral votes than an opponent.
Huh.
And I think you might remember when we talked about the Electoral College and the elections earlier, there were four candidates in the 1824 election, and they were all Democrat-Republicans. So you had Andy Jackson, William Harris Crawford, and Henry Clay, along with John Quincy Adams. And since no candidate had a majority electoral votes, it was solved, was sent to the House of Representatives, and they chose the highest three. And then the House elected Adams when Clay, who did not want Jackson to be president, released his votes to Adams.
Huh.
Now, here's an interesting fact. Again,
there were some
this is
mean
March.
People back in those days.
What's that?
There were some mean people
there
back
were.
In those days.
Well, if you've read anything about Henry Clay, he wasn't exactly one of the nicest fellows to come
okay.
down the pike.
All right.
Interestingly enough, in March, the first Monday in March of 1825, when John Quincy Adams was to be inaugurated as president, he arose at 5 o'clock in the morning, he read the Bible, and he took a swim in the Potomac.
Ooh, that could have been really cold at times.
That was his day
wow.
before he went down to the inauguration.
Huh.
All right, Andy Jackson. We're going to talk a little bit about Andy Jackson.
Okay.
Andy Jackson was the next president to be inaugurated, and that occurred in 1829. He had been very prominent figure in the War of 1812, and had been very popular as a general. The inauguration actually took place with very little pomp and ceremony. It occurred, obviously, at the Capitol building. But what happened after was kind of interesting. On Inauguration Day, a mob, a good mob, not a bad mob,
okay,
like you saw a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
But a good mob followed Jackson after the inaugural ceremonies at the Capitol to the White House, where they swept in and nearly took the place apart.
Oh, my.
The pressure of the crowd was so great.
And you say that's a good mob, huh?
Yeah, okay. The pressure of the crowd was so great that women fainted, clothing was torn, glasses and china were shattered and thrown all over the place.
Oh, my goodness.
And people stood on $150 official chairs to get a glimpse of the president.
Huh.
In danger of actually being mobbed himself, Jackson escaped by the back way and retreated to Gadsby's Hotel until the crowd was finally lured outside when tubs of liquored-up punch were placed on the lawn.
Oh, my. Well, that'll take care of them.
And interestingly enough, another mob scene took place later on in his administration when his admirers lugged a 1,400-pound cheese roll inside the White House and presented it to him. For hours, for several hours.
Sounds like
hours,
a fun guy.
What?
Sounds like a fun guy.
Yeah. For hours, a crowd of men and women and boys hacked away at this big wheel of cheese, leaving only a small piece for the president to enjoy. So he was very much loved. As I said, they were obviously mobs, good mobs, and not the type of mobs we saw.
Right.
That
2 weeks
stormed
ago
the
Wednesday.
Capitol here, yeah, a couple of weeks ago.
Huh.
All right, moving on to President Martin Van Buren, who was inaugurated in March of 1837. Mr. Van Buren, if you've ever seen pictures of Mr. Van Buren, he was a rather exquisite in appearance.
Okay.
His complexion was bright blonde, and he dressed accordingly. He wore an elegant snuff-colored broadcoat cloth with a velvet collar to his inauguration. His cravat, that's his tie, was orange with modest lace tips. His vest was of a pearl hue, and his trousers were white duck. And his shoes were Morocco. Morocco, can you believe it?
He must have had some money.
He did come from a relatively wealthy family, and he had Dutch ancestry.
Huh.
His neatly fitting gloves were yellow kid, and his long furred beaver hat with a broad brim was of a Quaker color.
Now, I just looked up his picture, and he's not that good-looking.
Well, I think in his day with the with those sideburns or whiskers that he had and the way his hair kind of stuck out on the side, and then his dress, obviously. So that's what he wore to his inauguration.
Huh. Oh, my goodness.
And that's really about all I have on the inauguration.
Huh.
As I said, there's some of this information that's kind of sparse on inaugurations. I guess they just got there, swore them in, gave a speech, and away they went.
Well, they'll have a lot to say about this one.
Oh, I think there'll be a lot written about this one.
Yeah.
Next up.
Yes.
We've got our friend, William Henry Harrison.
All right.
Who was inaugurated in 1841, March of 1841. Interestingly enough, in that particular year, he was 68 years old, and he was the oldest president to be inaugurated.
Huh.
Now, yesterday we had the 78-year-old,
who is now
the oldest to be inaugurated.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of an interesting fact.
Yeah, it is.
He also was the first to die in office.
Well, I was just about ready to say 68 had to be past the average lifetime.
Yeah, I don't know what the lifespan was in those days, but obviously that was considered elderly.
Yeah.
His inaugural address, which incidentally was written by Daniel Webster.
Ah, not bad.
Was the first to reach the country by railroad.
It was all spelled correctly, too.
Evidently. People in Philadelphia were amazed when they were able to read the speech in the newspapers there the very day it was being delivered in Washington.
That
so
is
neat. The speech was sent out ahead of time, which is very interesting. I don't think today we do that.
No, I don't think so.
But in those days, the railroads were operating, and they were able to deliver it around the countryside.
That's
standing cool. Bareheaded, without an overcoat, in a raw wind, old Tippecanoe, as he was known,
yep.
was inaugurated the ninth president on March the 4th. Back home in North Bend, Indiana, his wife, Anna Sims Harrison, was reluctantly getting ready to go to Washington. Now, she wasn't there. She wasn't on the dais that day. He was being inaugurated, but she was getting ready.
Took a long time to get ready back then.
Well, a long time to get there.
Yeah.
This is a quote from her. She said, "I wish my husband friends had left him happy and contented where he was," she said. By the end of the month, Harrison had fallen ill with what was then called bilious pleurisy, which, you know, they think was probably pneumonia.
Uh-huh.
And he died in office on April the 4th, exactly 1 month the day after taking the oath of office.
Wow.
His wife actually got the news just as she was about ready to depart their home. So she didn't even get to Washington before he passed away.
I'm looking at a picture of him. He looks kind of ill in his picture. He's
yes.
very thin.
Yes, yes, he was. He was actually the last president that had been born as a British subject.
Huh, that's an interesting fact, which I don't have on my inauguration facts.
Now, since he only served a month in office, his vice president, John Taylor, Don Tyler, assumed the presidency again 1 month later in April of 1841. Interesting, this is interesting about his inauguration. I guess you could call it an inauguration, so to speak.
Yeah.
He was the first vice president to reach the White House through the death of a president. When he got the news, he was on his knees shooting marbles with his children in Williamsburg, Virginia.
That's kind of cool.
He didn't even know Harrison had been sick when the chief clerk from the office of the Secretary of State galloped into his yard with the message that he was now the president.
Huh.
So he was sworn into office on the spot.
Huh.
So he really didn't have an inauguration. Not much to tell there. But I thought that was interesting about being on his knees shooting the marbles with his kids.
Huh. He had no vice president.
No, actually did not.
Yeah.
Okay, so we move on to James K. Polk. We talked a little bit about Polk earlier because he was kind of a small, inconspicuous type individual,
right.
And his wife had arranged for Hail to the Chief to be played when he first walked into a room. He was inaugurated president in March of 1845. He was the least conspicuous man who had ever been nominated for president. He was short, slightly built, gray-eyed, the first dark horse, actually, to become president of the United States.
You couldn't see him in a crowd at 5'4", or whatever
no,
you said he was.
No, he was small even for those days.
Yeah.
And the average height, was somewhere between 5'6", and 5'7". People were considerably shorter. Someone like Washington, who was 6'2", really stood out a crowd. And I think that's why he was always looked up to, no pun intended.
Yes, I understand.
The day that Polk was inaugurated, a cold, hard rain fell on the unpaved streets of Washington. All the uniforms and plumed hats became wilted through the downpour, and the people in the plaza could scarcely see the president. Again, he was so short, and it was raining, and John Quincy Adams, who was on hand that day, said that he spoke to a large assemblage of umbrellas.
Of what?
Umbrellas.
Oh, yes. Okay. So, his vice president was Zachary Taylor, I see.
I'm sorry?
His vice president was, who was his vice president?
Actually, I'm not sure that he had one.
Yeah, I don't see one. It said he was succeeded by Zachary Taylor, but...
He was not considered his vice president.
Now, yeah,
if I remember
history
correctly, no one was appointed.
Okay.
It would have just gone to the Speaker of the House if anything happened.
Okay, gotcha.
So that's about all to tell about him. Zachary Taylor, who you just mentioned, was elected president to follow him because he did not seek to be elected on his own. He was satisfied to serve out that term and then basically go home.
Mm-hmm.
Zachary Taylor, let's say, lose my place here.
He's quite an. I'm looking at his picture, and he looks quite handsome.
Well,
in his,
you know, Nan Britton, the mother of President Harding's only child, wrote the first tell-all book called "The President's Daughter."
Yes, it is a very detailed book, should we say?
Wow, is it detailed? I've seen instruction manuals that were less detailed.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Don't miss it.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Well, I have to do that at least once in every show. I have to blow through that because
no,
in honor of Charlie.
Yeah, right. That used to happen all the time with us.
Well, we were talking about Zachary Taylor.
Yes. Inaugurated in March of 1849. He was a hardy tobacco-chewing old regular army man.
He looks like it. Yeah,
he had very little schooling, no knowledge of the law, government, or politics. He'd never cast a vote in his life when the Whigs in 1848 decided that he was to be their man for president. He was called Old Rough and Ready by his former army mates. He was short, dumpy, thick-necked. He had a big head, enough to rest on the body of a giant. He had very short legs that his orderly always had to help him get up in the saddle of his horse whenever he got up on his horse. The day of his inauguration, not a whole lot happened. But on his way back to the White House, in which there was no parade or any particularly anything going on, he was walking back to the White House, and a young, newly appointed West Point lieutenant happened to pass him on the street and said, "Say, old codger, have you got the time?" to the President of the United States. The President smiled and recognized his mistake and says, "Hey, never judge a stranger by his clothes." And, of course, as you say, his picture is not very flattering.
No. Well, he just looked like an old army guy.
Yeah, and he died actually 16 months into office. He died.
Oh, I didn't know he had died that quick.
And his successor was Millard Fillmore.
Yes.
Who was his president.
And he did not have a vice president, I note here. And I remember Johnny Carson used to make fun of Millard Fillmore as the most unrecognized president of the United States.
Well, and actually, you know, if you take a look at him, he was kind of a handsome man.
Yeah, and he looks like a very successful man. He's a little on the heavy side in this picture.
Yeah. he was, of course, as you said, Old Rough and Ready's president or vice president when he was in office. So, again, he really didn't have an inauguration to speak. He was basically sworn into office upon the death of his predecessor, but a little bit about him, in contrast to Taylor, who used to walk the streets of Washington by himself and not known. The new president, Millard Fillmore, was over 6 feet tall.
Oh.
He was very erect, impressively handsome.
Nice hair.
People's things, and always faultlessly groomed.
Yes.
In further contrast to his predecessor, he didn't use tobacco in any form and actually disdained liquor to such an extent that he would always seek a temperance hotel to stop in when he was away from home. So he wouldn't stay in any place where they served liquor, nor did he succumb to the pitfalls of gambling, except he said on one occasion when he was 15 years old, he won a turkey raffle at a New Year's Day gathering. So, whether he considered that gambling or not, he thought maybe...
Was he married?
Yes, he was.
Okay.
Yeah, yes, he was. But he, as far as that raffle is concerned, he thought maybe this was the beginning and the end to his gambling.
Oh.
So, again, he did not have an inauguration, because of the death of his predecessor.
Of course, yeah.
Franklin Pierce.
And he was the 13th president. That's
correct.
I'm not sure I would have liked to have been the 13th president.
Kind of an unlucky number.
Yeah, I would have been afraid of people coming around the corner with a shotgun or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, I'm sorry.
Moving on to Franklin Pierce.
Yeah.
Sworn in March of 1853. Franklin Pierce was a New Hampshire Democrat with strong Southern sympathies who really didn't like politics. He'd resigned from the United States Senate and had turned down many political honors. He really did not want to be president.
Huh.
He said that the office, and I quote, would be utterly repugnant to my tastes and wishes.
Huh.
Now, there's a guy that really didn't want the job.
Yeah.
He was a dark horse candidate, unknown to the country, and really by no doing of his own. He made no speeches during his campaign. He was the most unambitious man who ever ran for the presidency, yet he was elected by the most sweeping majority.
Huh.
254 electoral votes to his opponent's 42. And that went all the way back to the second election of Monroe.
Huh.
And again, basically there was the only opposition he had was General Winfield Scott, who was not very well liked.
Huh.
Now, I have to point out, his inauguration, again, was not a pleasant occurrence. He and his wife, in January, were coming to Washington for the preparations for the inauguration, which were to occur in March, and they were traveling by train. And they had already lost one child. And actually lost two children, and they had their last child with them, a boy of 11 years old, and on their way to Washington for the inauguration, there was a train wreck.
Oh.
And the train, the car that they were riding in, suffered the most damage of the train wreck, and the only person killed in that train wreck was their 11-year-old son.
Huh.
The top of his head was taken off in the accident.
Oh, my.
Overshadowing, obviously, the inauguration, and really overshadowing the entire 4 years of their life in the White House. His wife, Jane Appleton Pierce, was a very sad woman the rest of the time that they were there. She hated Washington and obviously most everything to do with the presidency. So there was very little entertaining that went on. The inauguration took place with no pomp and ceremony. Minus the First Lady. So that shadow of calamity just kind of hung over the White House during their entire time there.
I noticed he had a vice president, but the vice president only lasted for a few month or so.
Yeah, I can't remember the circumstances there, but yeah, I think you're right.
And that was William King, who I've never heard of. So.
Yeah, someone that would probably came from Congress, most likely.
Okay. Sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. Moving on to James Buchanan.
Yeah.
Which I think you and I have talked about.
Yes.
The possibility of you maybe being interested to portraying.
And now seeing his picture, I qualify. Neither one of us are very good looking.
Well, he was very stately looking, though.
Yes, he does look stately.
And he was referred to as Old Buck. He was our only bachelor president, and he was kind of the delight of political cartoonists, and I've seen a lot of political cartoons done with his likeness. Thomas Nast, who was a cartoonist for a couple of the Colliers and the Illustrated newspaper at the time. I can't think of the name off the top of my head, but they used to picture him. He used to picture him a lot in his characters. In cartoons, so he was poked fun of quite a bit for the way he looked.
Now, I notice both he and Pierce only had one term in office.
Correct.
That's interesting.
Yeah, okay. Correct. Mm-hmm. He liked to feature that unruly tuft of hair
on
the top
that.
Of his head, which I don't know if it shows in the picture, the photograph that you have, but he had like a little top knot that he was very proud of. He was over 6 feet tall. Blue-eyed, and he had a very distinguished appearance. In fact, I thought he was very distinguished-looking. But he had the peculiarity of carrying his head slightly to one side, kind of like a Paul Parrott, you know?
Yeah.
And this, they said, was because of poor vision with his eyesight, one eye being farsighted and the other being nearsighted. Uh-huh. His political enemies during the campaign of 1856 said that this was not the reason for his tilted head. They said his neck had permanently become twisted in his attempt to hang himself some years before.
Oh, jeez.
Now, this was a baseless lie. It was never given any credence, so, you know, make of it what you wish.
Well, there have been a few of those in our politics. Yeah, baseless lies, yes.
His inauguration, basically very uninspiring, very low-keyed. He had no first lady, actually never did have a first lady. His niece, Harriet Lane, who assumed the position of mistress of the White House and took care of all the social events that took place. She herself didn't marry until she was 36 years of age.
Huh. But, it says here when in the notes on Buchanan, historical scholars rank him as one of the worst presidents ever.
And again, he was the forerunner to Lincoln coming into office.
Yep.
And he did little of anything to dissuade, if anything, he encouraged some of the southern states into secession,
right.
to seceding, I'm sorry. Really, he was not very well liked. Mm-hmm. And you want to talk about not helping with the transference of power or helping in any way to educate the incoming president and his upcoming staff into what was going on. He was probably the epitome of that. Maybe not so much as what we just experienced with the outgoing president and the new president, but definitely one that didn't do anything to his favor, let's put it that way.
Okay.
Now, it was said, I have read, that he did have a girlfriend at one time.
Mm-hmm.
He became engaged to a woman by the name of Ann Coleman, but according to history, she wrote him a letter of dismissal when she had heard reports that of his supposed philanderings.
Huh.
And it doesn't say whether the philanderings were with men or women. And again, there's a lot of controversy about his preference there as well.
Yeah.
Before he could set the matter straight with her, she got sick and died.
Oh.
They claim that he was never interested in another woman after that. So
that's interesting.
Make of it what you will, I guess.
It would have been interesting if Pete Buttigieg had become president, wouldn't it? I mean,
yeah.
He could have had a lot of
and it is interesting that the first openly gay man is going to be our next Secretary of Transportation.
Yes, yeah.
Which I thought was a very good choice on Biden's part, because who else would better understand transportation than a big city mayor?
Yeah, well, big city, South Bend? It's quarter of a million.
Big enough.
Yeah.
But I thought it was an interesting choice.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Obviously, he was a one-termer. Again, I think he had a lot to do with the problems that Lincoln inherited with regard to what was going on in the South.
The world was falling apart under him, yeah.
Yeah, really. Moving on to Abraham Lincoln. Interestingly enough, and I think we've talked about this before, there was a plot that was discovered by Alan Pinkerton and some of Alan Pinkerton's people that worked for him, Alan Pinkerton being the founder of the Pinkerton Detective Agency. There had been a plot discovered that there were some people that were Southern sympathizers that were planning the assassination of Lincoln before he ever took the oath of office, before he ever made it to the inauguration on his way to Washington. Lincoln's route was changed. What would have normally only taken a few days took over 40 days to get there, and instead of going directly into Baltimore, where his where the plot was planned, they made kind of a midnight raid, so to speak, and traveled through there with no stop. So they had to kind of sneak into Washington ahead of his inauguration. When Lincoln was on his way, the plan was formed that the original itinerary would be abandoned, and he would go straight through into Washington instead of stopping in Baltimore, which was ahead of the schedule, and arrived there at 6 o'clock in the morning on February the 23rd.
Way ahead,
because the inauguration wasn't going to take place till the first Monday in March.
We're going to have to take a break here, all right?
Okay.
Hey, Scott, I bet you cannot guess what my favorite type of animal is.
Cats?
No, dogs. Now can you guess what my favorite type of dog is?
Black Lab.
No, Golden Retriever. Was there any doubt?
WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM, The Talking Place.
Opiates has taken everything and everyone I've ever loved away from me. Everything.
I blew my ankle out and I got prescribed pain pills by my doctor.
If making my detox public is going to help somebody, I'm all for it. I just wish I would have had a warning.
Opioid dependence can happen after just 5 days. Know the truth. Spread the truth. A message from Truth, the Ad Council, and ONDCP.
Well, we're back here with Fred Malone of the Marion Historical Society, and we're talking about Abraham Lincoln's inaugural.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, his inauguration was hugely attended. I mean, probably the biggest of any of the inaugurations that had gone forth before that. I've seen pictures of the crowd at the inauguration, and unbelievable the amount of people that were there, given the fact that, you know, it was 1861.
Yeah.
But shortly before noon on March the 4th, the president-elect was driven in Buchanan's open carriage down Pennsylvania Avenue to the inauguration. If I remember correctly, there was a little loss between the two men. During the inauguration, the dome of the Capitol was actually unfinished.
Oh.
It was still being constructed at that time.
Interesting.
And if you Google Lincoln's inauguration, I think you can see some photographs or some artist renditioning of the scaffolding that was on top of the dome of the Capitol. When he was inaugurated the second time, there was a lot of controversy over why that work was continuing on, given the fact that we were in the midst of the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
And Lincoln, I think, if I remember correctly, said something to the effect that this was showing that the Union was going to continue on and survive and not be dismantled.
Kind of like what they did after the riot.
2 weeks ago, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting that history would repeat itself in that way, because even though there was still some damage that didn't get repaired for the inauguration yesterday, the majority of it was done. I think there were still some broken windows that hadn't been replaced.
Huh. Now, his vice president for the first one was Hannibal Hamlin.
Hannibal Hamlin,
and that's
not
a name I know. I know his second one was Andrew Johnson, but
correct.
That's because he became a president.
Right. Yeah. Well, Hamlin was a senator, I think, if I remember right, from maybe Missouri, somewhere out in that area.
Okay.
I'm not sure why the difference in choice was made. It could have had something to do with the impending Civil War and the secession of some.
He was from Maine.
I'm sorry?
He was from Maine, it says.
Andrew Johnson was Lincoln's second vice president.
Right.
And I wanted to mention this. This is kind of an interesting fact. On February the 18th of that first year, in 1861, just 2 weeks before Lincoln took the oath of office, Jefferson Davis had been inaugurated as president of the Confederate States of America in Montgomery, Alabama.
Yeah. Huh.
So when he took his oath, there was another president existing in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Well, they weren't united then.
No, they were separated by then. Absolutely, yeah. So obviously, Andrew Johnson succeeding Lincoln a little over a month after his second inauguration, he also did not have a formal inauguration with all the pomp and ceremony that
there's a war going on.
Given, just moving on.
Yeah.
But I wanted to mention, talk about a little bit about Andrew Johnson.
Sure.
Because as we learned, or as most historians already knew, and a lot of people learned yesterday, Trump became the first president not to attend the president that followed him inauguration,
yeah.
And that did not occur before Trump, all the way back to Andrew Johnson.
Yeah.
And Andrew Johnson did not attend the inauguration of his successor.
Well, that was Grant, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Johnson was solidly built. He was stood 5 feet 9 inches tall. If you've drawn up a picture of him,
I have.
You'll see that he was kind of had an impressive face.
Yes, he's a dapper looking gentleman.
He had kind of an Indian like look to him. He had black hair, deep set dark eyes, and he had a mouth with lines which showed kind of he was kind of grim looking when you looked at him. The hard expression may well have been caused by the many bitter battles that he had fought and the abuse that was heaped upon him. No president had ever been so vilified. He was kind of caught in the middle. To the South, he was a white trash and traitor.
Huh.
And to the fire eaters of the North, who wanted the rebels punished more severely, he was a turncoat.
Yeah.
To both, he was a drunkard.
Oh, really?
This accusation was a result of a condition that he had at the time of his inauguration as vice president. This was when he was inaugurated along with Lincoln.
Yeah.
A short time before the ceremonies, he had been ill, felt faint, and he asked for a stimulant. He drank 3 glasses of brandy before.
That'll do it.
And when he entered the Senate chamber, he was sober, but the hot, crowded room had its effect, and it made him a rambling, incoherent speech.
Oh, no, that's...
So Johnson, he had always been a moderate drinker, but unfortunately this one occurrence caused him to be branded as a drunkard from then on out.
I hope my wife is listening.
So
she's branded me.
Whether he actually continued on to be a drunkard is not known.
Okay.
But that is supposedly the reason why he was branded a drunkard, because of that. And I know if I drank 3 glasses full of brandy, I could probably be... classified as a drunkard as well.
I don't think I'd ever do it. I'm not a big brandy fan. But.
Well, no, nor am I. But if I would have, three glasses of wine would put me under the table. So
I noticed that he was succeeded by a gentleman who, when I lived in South Bend, Indiana, I lived across the street from his original home. Schuyler Colfax.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And it was on Colfax Boulevard.
Yeah,
is where we lived.
Interesting,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
So I think that's about all I have on him.
Okay.
What do we got here? About 8 minutes to go.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
All right. Well, we'll go as far as we can. I just prepared enough research on this through Cleveland, so we may not make it. We may have to pick up with him next go around.
That's all right. Gives us something to look forward to.
Yeah. Moving on to Ulysses S. Grant, who. Of course, was the commander of the forces during the Civil War, and basically, according to Lincoln, was the man that won the war for us, had it not been for Grant taking over that position. And by the way, Lincoln had, if I remember account, something like 6 or 7 commanding generals before he finally settled on Grant to take that position, before he settled on Grant. So he had a hard time getting somebody that could do the job. And most of the time, generals that were in that position wouldn't really follow on and do what Lincoln thought they should do. McClellan was one of the worst. McClellan wanted to be president. He really didn't want to be involved in the Civil War. So, and we know he did run unsuccessfully as a candidate for president.
There were a lot of generals at that time that just didn't do anything. They kind of let...
During the Civil War, absolutely.
Yeah.
And they were afraid to pursue.
Yeah.
A lot of time they were afraid to pursue the enemy, and that caused a lot of problems and cost us a lot of lives during the Civil War.
Yeah, it took a lot of time. Yeah.
Grant really knew nothing about politics before he was elected president. He'd only voted once in his life in a presidential election, and that was actually as a Democrat for Buchanan, interestingly enough, in 1859. And he was really without any party affiliations when the Republicans came to him at first and wanted him to run.
The Republicans were the party of his predecessor,
right.
Lincoln.
Mm-hmm. except for Buchanan, who was a Democrat, we mentioned.
Oh, yes.
But he really couldn't decide whether to accept their advances or not. His salary at the time as a general was $25,000 a year.
Sounds
and the
good.
Presidency at the same time offered the same amount.
Huh.
That was provided he was elected or reelected. So he really wondered what was going to happen to him after that. So he really thought about it for a long time, and finally, after quite a few indecisions, he yielded, and the Republicans then unanimously nominated him on their first ballot.
Huh.
He was elected by a popular majority of 309,000 votes out of 5 million, over 5.5 million cast.
Huh.
Andrew Johnson, being bitter over losing the election, and I don't know whether he professed that he did win it or not, but he did lose, refused to ride in the carriage with Grant to the inauguration and did not attend any of the ceremonies and was gone by the time of, Grant was inaugurated and taken back to the White House.
Did he go to Florida? I'm sorry.
I don't know where he went. He just kind of disappeared into oblivion.
Yeah.
So, as we know, Grant then was reelected 4 years later, and at that time, I really don't have a lot on the inauguration other than it was well attended, and was, of course, done on the first Monday in March at the Capitol building.
Uh-huh.
Rutherford B. Hayes followed in 1877. He was, again, a general in the Civil War, also a man from Ohio. Ohio was kind of dominating presidential politics during those years, and we're probably going to finish up with him today because I wanted to mention a couple other things before we go off the air.
Sure, we got about four and a half minutes.
Okay, the country had something really to be cynical about in the 1876 election. On the morning after Election Day, the newspapers announced the results. Tilden, the winner.
Yes.
And I think we talked about this before when we talked about the votes.
Yeah.
Tilden was the winner with 4,300,000 popular votes and 196 electoral votes. To Hayes, 4,036,000 popular votes and 173 electoral votes. Clearly a Democratic victory, but the Republicans would not concede. Sound familiar?
Yep.
They claimed that in three southern states, Tilden carried, Louisiana, South Carolina, and Florida, Negroes had been unlawfully kept from going to the polls. Had they been allowed to vote, Hayes would have been elected. Republican leaders and Southern Democrats met and made a deal. The three states would throw their electoral votes to Hayes, thereby giving him the election 185 to 184, provided that federal troops would be withdrawn and the states would be allowed to control their own affairs.
An infamous compromise.
The bargain was made, and it was kept. An electoral commission created by Congress decided in favor of Hayes on March the 2nd of 1877, just 56 hours before the inauguration.
Huh.
Hayes had nothing to do with the stolen election.
Ah, that's interesting.
So there you go.
Yeah, that just started some really bad times.
Does history repeat itself?
Yeah.
Well, we'll stop there, and we'll pick it up when we come back in February on the third Thursday of the month and carry on up to the present time. I did want to mention again, Monday, February the 22nd, on Mike Wilson's show at 5:15, we will be talking about all things Washington, who will be 289 years old on that particular day.
Well, happy birthday.
A large, looming figure in American history.
Yeah.
Also wanted to mention that the Marion County Historical Society obviously is closed now for the winter. However, the office is always open Monday through Friday, 8 to 4. And if you are at all interested in any publications that we have available in our bookstore, you can call the Historical Society office, 387-4255. Or you can stop and ring the bell on the State Street side, and the secretary will come to the door and inquire as to what you want. And you can also buy books on our website. That's MarionHistory.com, and pay for it through PayPal.
Great. Fantastic. Well, we'll have you on again in a month. And next week, by the way, we're going to have the Marion... Now I've forgotten what he's called. Anyway, we're going to have James Anderson
on. James Anderson, yes, I enjoy listening to James.
So we will have him on talking about all critters in Marion.
Oh, real quickly, my wife and I were out a few weeks ago with some friends and saw an eagle.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. I love seeing the eagles in this area because they're starting to come back pretty well.
Flew right over our heads.
Yep. Well, we got to get out of here. Thanks a lot, Fred. Take care. Bye-bye.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM.